This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 360 for Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me again this week is Mr. Lou Page. You can find him at Zombies Ate My Podcast, as well as Busy Zombie Lord on all the social media that matters. Welcome back, sir. Long time no chat.
Yeah, that's not like it's almost like we just did this.
Instead of doing like a 20-minute catch-up of how the heck are you, we can just like, we're the same. Everything's the same.
Everything is the same.
Everything is the exact same. I, however, have a little bit of news. I actually forgot to mention this last week because it happened like the same day that we ended up recording and I just had a very busy day. But I was interviewed by a grade school podcaster last Thursday, Little Cosmic Dancer, daughter of community member and my moderator, Cosmic Dancer, is the youngest senior reporter at her grade school in the UK. And she was inspired to do some podcasting because she listens to me do some Minecraft stuff. And I don't know if she listens to this Little Cafe because the subject matter is kind of adult, but she listens to the Minecraft podcast that I do with her mom. And so Little Cosmic Dancer is quite the little podcaster, which I think is fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think she's almost 10. That's how old she is, give or take. So like it was great questions. I got the questions ahead of time. They were all about like career as a podcaster, career as an artist, you know, what if kids want to do that kind of stuff when they grow up, like what should they study and what should they look for and stuff like that. It was really fun. It was really, really fun. It was only like a 15 or 20 minute interview. It was very concise, very professional. And apparently she's submitted like over 50 stories and recordings to her school radio station. So I mean,
that's awesome.
Hats off to Little Cosmic Dancer, man. I'm saying like it's.
I wish they had that kind of stuff when I was in school.
I said the same thing the other day. I was like, man, what would my life have looked like if I had even an old school radio station? Because podcasts weren't a thing back then. But like even just a radio station at school. They would have had one at Mount A at my university, but it would not have been talk radio. It would have been like you would have been like spinning, you know, indie music. And I'm not that into music to know what was hot. So like, I wouldn't be a disc jockey or anything like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, had podcasts come out just a little bit earlier in my life, I think I would have been on board a lot sooner. So that's really cool. And it felt really nice to be, you know, to have inspired some cool stuff and having people get into audio production and media production. Cause I'm telling you, like, if you want a job that's not going away anytime soon, like the media consumption around the planet is just astronomical. There's just so many different channels and so many opportunities. I mean, on one hand, there's also, you know, it's kind of like a needle in the haystack if you're doing a self-produced, self-published thing. But like if you end up working for, you know, websites or as a freelance journalist or whatever, like there's lots of really cool opportunities. So yeah, I wanted to say thanks for having me on the show. It was the top 10 tips, I think is how it was worded. And it was really cool. Actually, I want to get this right. I think I still have the recording. And darn it, I changed the name of the file. So I don't remember what it's called. Because I have it uploaded online. Oh, wait a minute. Topic Top 10. I'll leave her name out of it. But Topic Top 10 with Little Cosmic Dancer was very, very cool. And secondly, I'm sitting in a new chair.
How's that working out for you?
So far, so good. As with anything this kind of new, I would imagine it takes some getting used to, kind of like when you get a new car, you know. I don't think any car that you ever buy is 100% comfortable the second that you sit in it. There's always like a lot of seat adjustments and trying to figure out what's going on. And this is not much different than a car seat, actually. It has almost all the same bells and whistles. So I've mentioned this on the show before, but I picked up a Secret Lab Titan in Cookies and Cream. So it's got the soft weave fabric. I'm glad that I did that. I very much enjoy the feel of the chair compared to most kind of like PU leather kind of, you know, gaming style chairs that I've seen in stores and sat on and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, again, it was easy to put together. There was some assembly required. I posted those stories on Instagram and stuff, and it went together. I wouldn't say quickly because I took my time because it was not a cheap chair and I didn't want to, you know, ruin anything or, you know, accidentally rip fabric and stuff like that. So I was taking my time, put it together. There's a lot of really cool things about it, like having multiple ways that you can adjust the armrests, which is kind of handy.
That's the one thing I wish mine did.
Yeah. So they go up and down, left and right, and then they rotate a little bit, like 30 or 40 degrees, like kind of like a dial on a clock sort of thing. And then there's an additional adjustment underneath the chair, which I haven't done, which involves like, you know, unscrewing the bottom and moving the brackets in and out. So you can fine tune them a little bit if you need to. And I might have to do that. Especially I do find, I mean, it's technically a gaming chair, but I bought it because many of the people that were reviewing it online were also saying like, it's a very good task chair as well. So like they sit mm-hmm. in it to edit video, to like, to take care of stuff like that. I don't find the armrests very good for typing. At my Mac, I have a very narrow little chiclet keyboard and the elbows are too far away. So it's a little bit tricky in that regard. The back is definitely better than anything else I've tried. Having an adjustable lumbar support, very similar to a car, not electric, it's, you know, manual, but it's a lot more subtle than I thought, which is good because like everybody's back is going to be different. And yep. being able to like dial in and dial back the lumbar support, especially if like, cause you're not going to leave it in the same spot all day long. And that's something I realized today is that I was sitting here working and doing some things today. I noticed that like my back would be a little bit sore, but then I was like, oh, well maybe I don't quite need as much lumbar support anymore as it's later in the day. And sure enough, by loosening the support, I was like, oh, okay, that's more comfortable. And it's nice because it's just something you can reach behind and grab. Like it's not a hard thing to adjust, which is cool. I'm still playing with the height adjustment. And this is the only thing that I was surprised at with this chair. And I throw this under the, it is technically not a task chair. It is a gaming chair. And there's a lot of gamers that like to lean back with terrible posture, especially console and like controller gamers. I'm more of a PC stand up or sit up at the keyboard kind of person. And the seat is flat left and right with a little bit of a curve, but it's much flatter than most gaming chairs. It's not like a racing bucket. Like it's not a yeah. racing chair. It's a much more bench-like chair, which is good because I'm a big dude and it's nice to have the room. However, it's not flat front to back. There's a little tilt and there is a little upswing in the cushion. And like a lot of chairs, I find it's very deep. Like I'm used to sitting on a dining room chair, which is a good five, certainly a width of a hand, but it's a good 5 or 6 centimeters shorter than this chair. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking if you're designing a chair that you try to want to fit as many people in as possible, having the seat be deeper is just ruling out people that have shorter legs than like the hip to knee distance. But if you make it shorter, people with longer legs are just going to stick out farther off the chair and it's fine. But if you make the seat longer, you're going to rule out a bunch of people. And I'm right on this cusp. And it was hard to say because it was freezing here this morning. And I was sitting here working and my feet were getting cold. And I thought, well, that's weird, but it's also super cold outside. It was snowing today. And I was like, well, whatever, I'll adjust a few things. But sure enough, as time went on, I noticed that my leg was actually getting a little bit numb. I was like, okay, well, this isn't good. Like, this is not what I expected from this chair. And it turns out what was going on is that the front edge of the chair was digging up in behind my knees more than I'm used to and more than was comfortable. And it was reducing the circulation. And it's because I can't get the chair to sit flat. It even default as far forward as it can go, it doesn't rock forward at all. It's all backwards rocking. And which you can lock and keep it from doing that. But even as far forward as you want it to go, you're still dealing with this pressure underneath the front of your legs. So I thought, well, you know, I'll adjust the height so that my knees are a little bit higher and therefore not as much pressure on the back of my knees. But I wanted to be careful because when you sit in a chair at a computer, your knees are supposed to be slightly lower than your hips. but by default, this chair puts your hips lower than your knees. And I was like, well, for an ergonomically designed chair, that's a no-no. And so I was really not impressed with that. It's taken a little bit to get used to. When I first sat on it last night, it's a firm chair. And I knew that. I read those reviews. And I like a firm chair. I don't want to sit on a cloud because my back will be very angry at me. But it felt very strange in that just the way that it kind of, like the memory foam kind of like pressed up in places that you weren't used to. Like it was a weird sort of feeling. But I think the only real issue that I have with it at this point is this thing behind the knees. And so what I've done so far is that I've lowered the chair. I've tried to sit for bits and pieces today with like a cushion underneath my feet to just kind of like raise my knees up just that, because it's not much, it's just like an inch.
It sounds like you need like a footrest.
But when you spend $700 on a chair, I shouldn't have to buy a footrest. Like that's just not, you'd expect that a chair with this many adjustments would at least be able to rock forward.
It happens even in offices. Yeah. Almost everybody at the company I work for has a footrest. Almost everybody, because no matter what chair they buy you or they give you, or they almost none of them are right for everybody. And you always end up with a footrest.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that happens.
And so this is the only thing that I felt was a little common sense that was overlooked by the design of this chair. Like, and really all it would take is just the design of the front lip of the cushion, instead of having this little flip up, if it just went down, like if it just rolled down, like almost every other office chair out there, it would be fine. And I don't know why this ridge is there. Now, you know, most people that are my height, I'm 6'1", do not have a 32-inch inseam. I have very short legs for my height. And also, I'm in decent shape. I don't have spindly legs. So if you, for people that, you know, have big legs, you're going to feel this pressure more. Because unlike cushy chairs, where my legs would just sink into them, this is a firm chair that pushes back. And so I sat on the dining room chair again today, just to kind of feel like, so what? How was I sitting on this thing before? And like, what are the benefits? Like, what is it, good? Is it bad? Am I just not getting used to it? So the biggest difference with the dining room chairs is that they are very short compared to, like, I mean, my knees are 3-5 inches off the edge of the chair. So there's nothing behind my knees, which is fine. My feet are flat on the floor. My hips are lower or higher than my knees by a little bit. Like everything about the dining room chair is fine from the, like the knee hip sort of situation, but I can't adjust the height of those. And I'm always battling having sore wrists and dealing with like ergonomics and stuff like that at the desk, because I'd have to raise and lower the desk, you know, as opposed to the chair to work with the dining room chair. And the dining room chair, when you lean back, there's nothing. Like there's this huge triangle of empty space between where your shoulders hit the backrest and your lower back. Like there's no support whatsoever. So I've noticed today that my wrists are not bothering me at all, because in adjusting the chair down to a lower height, I feel low. So it feels a little bit strange. I do feel lower than I normally am, because I can't kind of tuck my feet under the dining room chair and raise myself up a little bit. And with the armrests and stuff, they're okay. Obviously the problem with armrests getting them high is that then you can't pull the chair in close enough. So I don't find that I'm close enough to the keyboard in terms of doing any long-term typing. And so even though I've got my wrist okay for something like gaming, where like it's straight out across the table, it touches the mouse, like it does not feel out of sync at all. I do feel like I'm going to have to get under the chair with a wrench and loosen the bolts and move the armrests around so that can be a little bit closer together. I'm worried long-term about shoulder and neck pain, because with the chair low enough for my legs, my arms are kind of like under the table. So like I have to kind of raise my arm up to type and stuff. So I know that that's not going to be good long-term. But like other than that, very specific to me sort of complaint about like having a tall torso and short legs. The only fault that I can see with this chair is that that flip up behind the knees. And again, it's probably just putting pressure on me because of the shape of my legs, whereas other people, taller, thinner dudes, probably wouldn't deal with it. And if you're a shorter, rounder person, you wouldn't be buying this chair anyway, because it's designed and meant for people that are my height or taller, and you know, and like up to 280 pounds, I think was the top limit on it.
Can I make you feel better about your shorter legs?
Sure.
At the office, now that I'm working from home now, but when I am at the office, I had a sitting desk for the longest time, and then I finally got a doctor's note so that they could upgrade me to a standing desk. They only had to raise my desk 8 inches.
Nice. Yeah. And I had a standing desk for a long time, and I removed it to put the gaming computer on it. And so all of my stuff is done sitting now. Now, this is going to be a different experience when I go to draw as well, because I normally sit up a little bit more, like I'm on a stool when I draw. And so I'm hoping that this will allow a little bit more of a lean back experience because of the support that it does give. And we'll have to see. So I'm going to give it a solid try. Obviously they have a return policy. Otherwise I would not have bought it. I looked into that when I was online.
Yeah.
You just have to keep all the original packaging. It wouldn't be too terrible to take apart and send back, I don't think. But it's one of those things where like, it's the hassle of like, finally finding a chair that's decent compared to any other. Yeah. I mean, it's better than any other $200 to $300 chair that I've ever bought from like Staples, Business Depot, or anything like that. Like those are just immediately after a day, I'm just screaming in pain and not liking them at all, and they're not comfortable. And this is, like I said, it's mostly comfortable. I just have to figure out how to adjust it for me. And it could be just something as simple as like, I looked up those adjustable angled foot pads on Amazon. They're like $20. So
yeah.
The principle of the thing, though, for me is like, I just spent $700 in this chair. I don't want to buy a $25 footrest. Like, I shouldn't have to. But at the same time, I mean, maybe I should have had one of those footrests all this time anyway. You know, like, so it's one of those things that I may have to look into for comfort. But as far as like the day of sitting here and working, because the day was a full day, just jumped right in and said, all right, well, let's just adjust it. And I understood this morning was going to be me a lot of like adjusting things and moving things around and seeing what's what. And over the morning, I found it getting more and more comfortable as I was making small adjustments and things like that. So,
and at least you have it now.
Yes. Yeah. No, precisely. And I think what I'll notice is I'll just have to take some mental notes as to how my back feels, like on Friday or the next time I stream for like 3 and 4 hours, I'll see how that feels. I always take breaks. Like you still have to take your break every hour. Like you can't sit for hours at a computer, no matter what chair you're on, and expect to feel good, you know? So, but the first time I do a longer gaming session, when I take a break every hour and then just kind of gauge how my back feels after that, I think will be very telling. And speaking of, I don't have an awful lot to talk about this week in terms of what I've been doing and consuming and watching, mainly because it's been a lot of things I've already watched and a lot of things I've already talked about on the podcast, but I have been doing a lot of streaming. And so if you're interested, you want to go over to twitch.tv/Joel Duggan. I have been streaming a lot of Minecraft from the Citadel. I'm looking to do some more other games now that I'm streaming a little bit more frequently, but because of the time away from the end of March through the end of April with the frame rate issue that I've been having on the PC, now that I'm back and have the PC to a point where it's not really affecting me, it's not giving me kind of motion sickness when I'm playing, the stream quality is okay. I wouldn't call it magical, but it's good enough. People don't seem to notice it either. So I've been having a lot of fun and putting in some extra time over there, and that's been great. So if you're looking to kind of catch what I do live, mostly on weekends around 2 or 3 Eastern I'd say 2 Eastern is probably about when I start for sure. If not a little bit earlier, then check that out at twitch.tv/Joel Duggan. And, there will be some other streams coming up. I'm working in May to try and get like some Lego streams happening where I build Lego, and, I want to do more art streams. I got to get the emotes done for my channel, so I'm going to do that. And so there's going to be a lot of variety coming to the channel. It's all behind the scenes stuff that takes time to set up, but that's most of what I've been doing as far as media goes. However, I did rewatch Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. Have you seen it since you saw it in theaters?
I never saw it in theaters. I have not seen it at all.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet? Okay. Well, this will be a brief conversation.
I literally disliked the last film so much.
Oh yeah, okay.
That I just went. You know what? I'll wait till it shows up on a streaming service I have, and right now I don't have any.
You don't have any.
And I'm not really excited. My best friend saw it, and him and I feel about the same about Star Wars. And his exact words were, "I don't bother." And I went, "That's all I needed to know. That's all I needed to know."
Yeah, I think it might have been too soon for me to rewatch it, but I was, I don't know whether it was an article or just one of those, like, you know, motivational quotes that you see people circulating now these days, but someone was saying that a lot of people are rewatching older series because there's no anxiety. You know how it ends, you know how it goes. There's no worry, yeah. There's no... on the edge of your chair sort of feeling, and it feels safe right now because of all the uncertainty in the world. Rewatching yep. older things feels safe. For me, I think the motivation for watching things I've already seen before is the removal of the choice paralysis that happens with Netflix, you know, where it's just like, oh gosh, I get 23 things marked as like watch later. And I just like, what am I in the mood for? I don't know. I kind of want to, all of this stuff is like, you know, Netflix productions or half of it is. So I don't know if it's any good or not. Whereas like Star Wars, I saw it. I didn't hate it. So I know that I'm going to at least be entertained for the next couple hours. Right. Yeah. Same thing with, I mentioned last week that I was watching the older Star Trek movies from 2009, J.J. Abrams and that series. And I think that part of it was just like, I just wanted something sci-fi or fantasy, high escapism, and just like let her rip, you know, and go. I didn't actually watch it in one sitting. I ended up breaking it up. And it had nothing to do with the film. It actually had something to do with Disney Plus, or at least Disney Plus in the combination of my setup. I've been noticing a lot recently that some of the services are not performing the best. And I don't know whether my Apple TV is on the fritz, my old set-top box unit. Or because it's not my Wi-Fi, that's fine. Or whether there are other things that, because I've watched things on my iPad Pro and they're fine. So I kind of wonder whether it's, you know, an Apple TV issue.
It might not be the Apple TV. It might just be internet in general.
Well, Erica, the thing is, it's not slow on the iPad. So
it's not a matter of slow on the iPad. It doesn't have to put it out at 1080p 100% all the time on your iPad, does it?
Well, it does. It's a Retina iPad. So yes, it would.
Yeah. It does. Okay. Cause I know that we've had some things where like we're watching stuff that's only in 480p anyway, and it will get pixelated on us. And I'm like, yeah, that's because everybody in the neighborhood right now is watching.
Yes. Yeah. And I did notice that I had less issues on Sunday night versus Saturday night. So like I was thinking about that too, but I just find it frustrating.
It's probably a mix of a bunch of things.
But all of these companies, I mean, between like the source of all of this, you know, Disney and Disney Plus, and then the pipelines, which are major companies in the planet, they all have the money and the infrastructure that this should not be a problem. And so I want your opinion on this. I would much rather have a video either slow down and buffer and say, we need to load a couple minutes ahead and stop, then continue and take a film that is as visually stunning as Star Wars and bring it down to like 720. And
I'm only okay if it's dropping to 720, if it's only for a minute or two. If it's only doing it for like a minute of the film and then it'll get caught up, that's fine. But when a film does it and it does it for like 5-10 minutes,
yeah, that's what
that's what annoys me. I get it if like when you first start it up, you get a reduced quality, that's fine with me. While the credits are rolling, I don't care if it's not 100%. But by the time the film is like midway through the film, you should have enough of it preloaded that I'm not getting slowed down.
Exactly. And that's how I felt too. And I would rather sit at the beginning. Like even if a service popped up and said, hey, during COVID-19, we're experiencing much higher traffic than normal. To ensure that you have a high quality experience, we're going to ask that you wait for 3 minutes before we start the film, just to kind of build up a buffer and have someone go, okay. And like expectations set, like I'm good. But when it wasn't working, it was especially, and I think I would notice it less if I was watching something I don't know, like a rom-com, I probably wouldn't care, you know, as much as watching Star Trek and Star Wars over the last, you know, week or so. You really notice it on Star Wars, because some of these vistas and some of these, like, the, you know, the ruined Death Star and like all this kind of stuff that's in the film, you're just like, you want to see all the detail that they put into these set pieces. And you're just like, why is it blurry? I don't remember it being blurry. And of course, I'm also remembering, like, I've only saw it the one time in theaters, and so that was on a big screen, and now I'm trying to watch it at home on like a 37 inch television. It's HD, but it's still, like, you know, it's a much different experience, so you want things to be a little bit crisper. So yeah, it's, I won't say anything else really about the film. It was more about the experience that I was having. I did notice like a few other things that were just like, that stuck out to me. One of the nice things about Rise of Skywalker is that once you've seen it, and like you know, like your friend said, like, you know, really wasn't phased either way, going back in, your expectations are not as high. So I was still entertained. I thought it was, I enjoyed paying attention to some of the subtle character arcs that I don't think I caught the first time. I think I pulled more out of it that I liked than the first time I saw it. But I just, a few little like notes that I thought were really interesting that really stuck out that I don't remember smacking me in the face the first time I saw it. But there are some lines in the film that are repeated by different characters, like a lot. It feels really cheap. It's just like, but we already know this. Like, Poe said that like two scenes ago, and now 3PO's saying it. Like, but I know we have to win. I know. I know we have to beat the Emperor. And it's not even like a twist on the same line. Like, it is the same line. And it's like, yeah, it's a little bit ham-fisted. I was really surprised how little Luke Skywalker is in the film. I remember him being in it, like as a Force ghost. But I was like, he really doesn't contribute a lot. And it felt odd. And it's one of those things where, like, I really want to see the extended cut. And I don't know if we're getting that kind of stuff with Disney Plus. I didn't see anything. No,
well, you're not going to get an extended cut, I don't think, anyway. They really don't do that with the Star Wars movies that often.
Well, like, well, not the extended cut, but like the behind the scenes or the deleted scenes or things like that. Things that you would get on a Blu-ray set, you know, like if you wanted that kind of thing.
I don't know if they're doing that with Disney Plus, but I've seen a bunch of that stuff floating on YouTube.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's the thing to do. And the last thing was, I think maybe brought to light by me watching the old Jurassic Park films and then going up through that series and noticing the difference in the pace of the filmmaking over 30 years. And I really felt the manic pace of Rise of Skywalker compared to the much slower original Star Wars, kind of like pan down to the planet and, you know, ships coming through the establishing shots.
They didn't have time
shots.
For that. They did. Well, they would have made the movie too long.
They didn't take the time for that. There was plenty of opportunities where they could have done it, and they still did it. The difference is that it was a 10-second, like, whoosh, and you're just like, geez, just slow down. Like, I barely was able to take in what just happened. And I feel like one of the things that removes is the breath for the audience to then feel the emotion of the previous scene. And then you have this like slow meandering space thing where there's no dialogue and you can just sort of like process what just happened, and you don't get that time. And I really noticed that again, compared to older movies, the pace of Rise of Skywalker is on pace with most things in Hollywood right now. And I feel, it might be a little bit old man, get off my lawn, but like, I feel like it's too fast. Like, I feel like just there needs to be a slowdown.
It's not just you.
In the storytelling, so
it's not just you. I hear that from a lot of people. I even hear that from some younger people too.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. I'd be really curious to talk to somebody that's like 16, you know, like the high octane, give me all the media teenager, and just you know, and say like, do you find this stuff fast? Because I find this stuff kind of fast, and I'd be curious to see what they would think of watching like an older film, you know, like from the 80s or the 90s, and seeing how the pace. I mean, God, even just Lord of the Rings, the turn of the century. Like that has got some slow parts in a good way. Like there, it's a long walk. It's a long road, you know? But that's it for me in terms of what I've been doing. Like I said, Minecraft and streaming took over most of my media time this week, in terms of what I've been watching. I do have a little bit to talk about what I've been reading, but I feel like I've been rambling for a while. So what have you been doing over the last week?
So one of the things I've been doing, I meant to bring this up last week, but I just didn't get around to it. I've mentioned it before. There's a horror movie streaming service called Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you guys now have it in Canada, which I don't think you did the last time I brought it up. And a old horror movie critic, Joe Bob Briggs, used to have a show on TNT and he used to host old horror movies. And they brought him back for another season. So on Shudder, he has the show called The Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs, where they watch horror movies, usually kind of, some of them are really good, some of them are B. He kind of picks a variety. And he shares his knowledge with you and where the commercial breaks would be, but there's no commercial breaks. So you'll watch the movie for like 10, 15 minutes, and then it will cut away where the commercial break would be in the movie. And he gives you the rundown on what just happened in the movie or what the director, conversations he's had with the directors of the film about what happened and why they did X, Y, and Z. And last season, he had one or two interviews almost every week. I think this is week four. Almost every week, he has at least one, if not two, interviews with someone who's actually been involved with the film. Week before last, it was horror movie director, special effects artist Tom Savini. And he picked his brain about a wicked low-budget indie movie I had never seen called Maniac, in which it was one of Tom Savini's first jobs as a special effects artist.
Cool.
And there's a scene in the movie where it's basically kind of like a ripoff of like the Zodiac Killer. And there is a scene where the killer shows up to a couple that is making out in a car, and he climbs up on the hood of the car and shoots them through the windshield with a shotgun. And when they do it, you literally watch Tom Savini, who is actually acting in the movie in the 70s, get shot and watch his head explode. And he breaks down how he did it and what he used to do it and everything in the interview. And it's really fascinating to hear. Best part about that story is they shot that scene in New York, and it is against the law to fire a firearm in New York City in the 80s. So they had a off-duty cop sitting in the parking lot when they shot the scene. They threw the gun in his trunk, and he drove off with the gun, and they cleaned up the scene and were gone in 60 seconds before the cops showed up because gunshots were heard.
Wow.
And that they were all terrified they were going to get arrested when they did it.
Wow, that's crazy. So like that kind of behind-the-scenes stuff would be really, really cool. And Shudder, Shudder.com. Shudder is currently available in the U.S. and its territories, Canada, U.K., and Ireland as of April 9th, 2020.
Yep, and from what I understand, I used the code Savini 2 weeks ago to get my 30 days free. But if you use the code TROMA this week, you get 30 days free.
Oh, cool.
And Shudder has a ton of horror movies and things like that if that's up your alley. My highlights so far, Joe Bob does two movies every week, every Friday night. My highlights so far have been Chopping Mall, where robots kill a bunch of teenagers in a mall. Oh, it's bad in a fun way.
Yeah.
The new security system are like these tank robots that are like supposed to protect the mall, and they proceed to start killing the people that have stayed in the mall too late at night.
Oh my God.
it's real bad, but fun. Heathers, which I don't consider a horror movie. It's kind of like a black comedy, but they watched that one night and I was like, oh, I haven't seen this movie since high school. And it was better than I remember. And then I'm not a fan of Italian horror movies. They were really big in the 70s and 80s. But I sat through Deep Red, which is a Dario Argento film. And it's really good. It might be one of my favorite Italian horror movies, and I don't like them.
Oh, wow.
This guy is a concert pianist. And the concert venue brings in instead of doing a concert one night, they bring in like a psychic that's going to like read the audience. And the psychic tells the audience somebody in the crowd is a murderer and then proceeds to describe the murder that was committed. And the psychic gets killed shortly after. And everybody in the audience is literally like a suspect. and someone starts bumping off audience members because they all know too much. And the pianist and a reporter who happened to be there are like trying to help the cops solve the murder and figure out who got killed.
Right on.
And I it's weird but fun, and it like all the deaths are really gory in like a 70s kind of way, and I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I'm down for thrillers, but horror, like gore horror, is always a no for me.
Yeah, then don't watch Brain Damage. That was another one they did, and that was like a giant beef jerky thing that's supposed to be a brain parasite. Bites onto this guy's head, and when it's feeding on him, it makes him have psychedelic trippy dreams and murder people for him so it can eat them.
And
Erica watched about 60 seconds of it, and I was like, I'll change it if you don't want. And she's like, no, I'm hooked. And she hates horror movies. She's like, this is weird and fun in a weird kind of way. I'm ready to watch this. I was like, okay, hon.
Oh man. I can deal with that kind of stuff when it's cartoony. You know, like if you're watching some Rick and Morty episode and some alien is sucking on some guy's brain, like I'm fine.
That's the way this whole movie is. The creature is stop motion and it sings songs and does like dance routines and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah. So then I would just be checking out because it would be a bad film for me. I was like, nope, I can't do this. This would not be good.
Yeah. But so if horror movies are your thing, I definitely recommend checking out Shudder for 30 days free.
Nice. The code was Troma, T-R-O-M-A, right?
Yep, because this week they are interviewing Lloyd Kaufman, who is the head of Troma Studios.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's why the code is Troma this week.
Not to be confused with trauma, which is what you might feel after watching some of these films.
After you watch a Troma movie, that's about what you're going to feel.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm not a Troma fan. Not a fan at all.
Anything on like the small screen?
Since I'm working from home, I try to keep something going in the background. If it's a podcast, I sometimes listen to a podcast. I've listened to a few audiobooks, but they're just not hitting the spot. So I've just kind of found something on TV to leave running in the background. And I've been watching The Saint with Roger Moore from the 60s.
So was that turned into a movie?
Yes, and it's really bad.
Yeah. Who was in
it? It's really bad.
Pierce Brosnan? No.
No, it's...
Iceman.
Val Kilmer.
That's right.
Yeah. It's Val Kilmer. And the movie is like nothing like the show. The Roger Moore show, he's more James Bond in the show than he was in Bond movies. It's really weird.
Cool.
He plays this guy named Simon Templar, who's like a rich socialite and goes around playing Robin Hood. And someone will get screwed over by like a mob boss. And so he decides to make it his goal to get that mob boss thrown out of town or thrown in jail. And so he'll go on these like elaborate schemes, dress up as somebody and pretend to be somebody else and sneak in and infiltrate them and catch them off guard and then give all the info he got to the cops and be like, yeah, you can arrest them now. And people know who he is, so he has to like dress up sometimes and pretend to not be himself.
Interesting.
Every episode is like a mini Bond movie.
Are they hour long or half an hour?
They're about an hour long. It was done by the BBC, I think, or ITV.
Interesting.
And they're from the 60s, so it is very 60s, and it's black and white. And one of the funniest things for me is I'm watching it. And every time he meets a girl, if they're, of course, the 50s, she's the hot girl for this week with him. Okay, uh-huh. And half the time, I'm like, why do I recognize this woman? And so I'll look it up on IMDb, and I'm like, oh, she's a Bond girl from Sean Connery's time.
Right.
Okay. And so, like, almost every other episode, it's like, oh, yeah, that one was a Bond girl. Oh, yeah, that was a Bond girl. Oh, wait, no, they've used this Bond girl 3 times already in the first season, and she's played a different character every single time.
Wow. The character was created by Leslie Charteris in the 1920s.
Yeah, and he's based on a book.
Yeah, and you're right. It is ITV. And I'm looking at what looks like the title card. It looks like the opening to The Incredibles, like that kind of 70s, like kind of cartoony. Yep. I don't know what font that is, but it's like everything's all like helter skelter, like the T is taller than the N, but then the H is smaller than the E, and It's all kind of like very classic 60s.
And my favorite thing about the show is before every episode begins and before you kind of know what's going on, he talks to you, the audience, and gives you kind of like almost like a Twilight Zone kind of like rundown of like a moral. And then as the episode unfolds, you kind of see what he was talking about the beginning of the episode. And you're like, oh, that's kind of neat. That, and then before they run the credits, always somebody always says, hey, is that Simon Templar? And then they show him and a like halo forms over his head and it cuts to the credits and goes, the Saint. And I was like, this is cheesy and only 60s can only the 60s can do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I thought the Saint was like a code name or something for like his like for a spy or something that.
The movies always portray it that way, but in the show, it's not that way at all. It's just a nickname he's come up, been called because of all the people he rescues.
Right. Cool. Yeah, I'm surprised that we don't hear more about the older TV series that are now just available for different places, you know, streaming online and just accessible. And
this is streaming. I'm streaming it on Amazon Prime for free.
Nice. Very cool.
No commercial. I was watching it on something else. Like I watched the first episode and it had commercial breaks and I was like, ugh. And then I was like, I got to look on Amazon. Maybe Amazon has it. And then I found it on Amazon. I was like, oh, yep, this is where I'm watching it now. No more commercials.
Sweet. Well, one of the reasons that I've not consumed a lot of television and film over the last little while is because I've been reading the World of Warcraft Chronicle books, and I am now well into Volume 3. I'll keep the discussion short just because I want to finish it before I really kind of heavily weigh in, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not rushing through. I'm kind of reading just a little bit, you know, at night sometimes before I go to bed, and or sometimes out on the balcony in the morning when it's sunny. Not today. It was snowing. So with this volume 3, I find it a bit different than the other volumes. We are now like 8 to 12 years beyond the Dark Portal being a thing in Azeroth. So the events that are taking place are much more personal and have a lot more narrative. So to give you an example, things in Chronicle Volume 1 and Volume 2 would be more about like this war chief did this or this god or this titan and this battle took place and the end result was like this continent was formed or this culture fought that culture. And there would be less about like, you know, the story of the king of that culture. Maybe a little bit, but not a lot. Anecdotes. But in this volume, in Volume 3, we're getting to know the characters of Arthas Menethil, of Thrall, Jaina of Proudmoore. Like, these are all characters that I encountered when playing World of Warcraft. So these events, I did a little bit of timeline searching as well, just kind of brushed my brain up a little bit. And World of Warcraft, the vanilla game, started around 25 years after the Dark Portal. So here I am 8 to 12 years after the Dark Portal. So I'm well within range of like these characters being very much alive, providing they weren't killed in battle. And you know, adults doing their thing, you know, like late in the second volume, they were talking about Jaina Proudmoore being like a little girl. And in this, she's like a trained mage with, you know, a lot of ambition and abilities. And she's the beacon of hope for, you know, humans and stuff like that. So they get into a lot more detail. So it's a slightly different writing style, despite the fact that it's still written by the same three people. Chris Metzen is one of them. I think Robert Moore is the other one. There's three altogether, and they've written all three. But I'm really enjoying it, especially because these are things that I am familiar with, even though I haven't experienced them directly. So, for example,
right,
while I did play through The Wrath of the Lich King, I didn't do Ice Crown Citadel. Like, I don't remember. Maybe I did, but I only did it the once, you know, just to experience the story. But that was the second time the world had to deal with the Lich King. The first time that they had to deal with the Lich King, which is what I'm reading right now, was in Warcraft 3, Frozen Throne. Or Warcraft 3 and Warcraft 3, Frozen Throne. And those are the two RTS games that I didn't play that really were super popular and spun, you know, Blizzard out to do like World of Warcraft. I don't know all the story behind that, but essentially those deep, deep stories are what were kind of like the groundwork for what the player was going to experience going into World of Warcraft. And so now I'm watching about, you know, watching the first and second world or second wars happening between the orcs and humans, and how the Horde, as I know it as a player, that consists of orcs and trolls and Tauren. And like, I just read a passage earlier today about how Thrall and the orcs and his Horde met the Tauren, and how by helping the Tauren fight the Centaurs, the Tauren agreed to then eventually join the Horde. And so it's just this really cool kind of like building blocks of stuff that I'm very familiar with as a player, or as a former player, I should say. And so I'm really enjoying it. I'm taking my time. I'm just kind of at the very first chapter-ish, only 30 or 40 pages in. So it's good. I like the escapism. I like the, there's still short entries. Like, it's only a half a page to a page and a half of like this battle or that battle. But you really start to see some parallels with other media, you know, like who and what the Lich King is following the path of Arthas Menethil as he becomes the Lich King, and then moving on from there, he's essentially Darth Vader. Like, it's just the way that he goes through the world, it's akin to Anakin Skywalker becoming Darth Vader, and it's really neat to see those. I don't want to call them tropes because it has like a negative connotation, but to see those themes, those hero, fallen hero, villain, unstoppable force. It's basically like Darth Vader meets the Ice King from Game of Thrones.
Right.
Because the army, the scourge that Arthas is commanding, is essentially like the White Walkers. Like, as soon, when one of your comrades dies, he's then risen, you know, by the Lich and the Lich King and the Death Knights, and then thrown back against you in battle. But it's really cool stuff. And my only complaint is that it's going so fast now that I happened to lose my place. My bookmark fell out, and I was going back through and trying to figure out where I left off, which is fine. It's not a big deal. Because again, like every page and a half, there's like a new header, you know, like the War of the Ancients, or like the Battle of this, the March of that. And so it's easy to try and figure out where you were, but in reading the passages, and you're like, did I read this before? And you have to get like a couple of paragraphs in, and you're like, oh yeah, I totally read this a couple of days ago, because there's just so much happening that I just can't keep track. Like, I'm not remembering as much. Whereas because of the pace at which things were happening and the scale at which things were happening in the other books, in terms of planets being formed and civilizations moving around, it was a lot easier to process. And a lot easier to retain, I should say, not process, because it's a well-written book. And it's still very matter of fact. Like, when you have a battle between Arthas and, is it Kael'thas? That's the place, I think. He fights an elf, a high elf, at the Sunwell, and defeats him. And that is still like a sentence or two. Like, it's not like this long, drawn-out battle. It's just the straight, you know, like, he faced them and he put up more resistance than any, you know, other, you know, alliance member that Arthas has ever faced. But nonetheless, he fell. And that's it. Like, they're not sword fighting for two paragraphs, right? Like, it's a straight up, right, like bang, bang, then you're dead, you know? But it's good. I quite like it. I'm looking forward to more. And it makes me miss MMOs. It doesn't make me want to go resub to WoW, because I don't, like, WoW to me is not worth the $20 a month. Like, I can't justify it because I don't have the time. But it makes me miss that, because they're describing the world and they're describing like the continents and everything has been formed. But now you're witnessing in the book the political shifting that's happening, as like the Scourge come in and they turn this area into the Plague Lands. And then, you know, like this mountain gets moved, or like this happens and this Sunwell gets corrupted. And so you're seeing all these things that are in place that kind of create this very rich world that you get to walk around in as a player. I miss that experience. I miss walking through that enchanted forest and then having it clear, and then realize that you're in these huge plains, these grass plains inhabited by the Tauren, or, you know, whatever. And that's that kind of adventure, that kind of like what's around every corner. That's what I really miss about having the time to play MMOs, or even having an MMO that's appealing enough. The last time I was really into one was, what was it called? It was a sci-fi one. and the planet
something star,
wild star.
Wild star, yeah. That's gone now, I think.
It is, yeah. No, it's long discontinued. It's been a couple of years now since they closed that down, which is too bad because it was cool. What I don't like about the MMOs is like all the, you know, the goofy people that you have to deal with, like jumping all over the place and being silly in the game and like that kind of stuff I find kind of tedious. But I really enjoyed like this. Ironically, I like the solo play in MMOs, you know, like I like wandering around and exploring vast worlds. I mean, I guess it's the same kind of thing that I really enjoy about, Assassin's Creed games, is that those maps are usually really big, especially when you're talking about like Black Flag, where you can sail the sea and go to different islands and hunt for treasure. And like, if you're in the mood to go fight and play the mission, you can do that. Or if you're in the mood to treasure hunt and try to make yourself better, pick up some better gear, you can do that too. And so those kind of exploration games I find really cool. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute. This is, of course, brought to you by you, dear patron. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. It's one of the reasons that we can keep on doing this throughout all the things that are happening in the world right now. You can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out more. There are multiple levels with different rewards like Discord roles and bonus episodes. I will point out that during the last few months, we have made the bonus episodes available to any patron, not just the barista level, but any patron at all gets access to the bonus recordings starting in 2020. So people have been enjoying those. We are currently at 20 patrons. We need one more to be 21 for next month. My goal is to always have one more patron than we did the month before. So May has got a couple more weeks left. So if you're on the fence, if you're wondering what could you do, what could you see in the Discord, what might be a benefit to you, then head it over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And check it out. And I will let you know that there's been a lot of hot and heavy Lego chat in the Discord as of late. We have some new people that have been coming in through Twitch, through some subscription benefits there. And there's been a lot of quick Lego, you know, exchanges about like the story of how people got started, what their sets are like, and what they own, what they wish they own, which led me to this week's pick, which is the Lego Star Wars A-Wing Starfighter 75275, the Ultimate Collector Series Edition. This is a nearly 1,700 piece set, similar to a lot of the other collector series, where they're quite detailed. They're much larger than, say, a minifig. They're meant to be more like a shelf model. Do we care? I don't care. I feel bad that I don't care, because the A-Wing is not my favorite ship. Now, you're obviously not the biggest Star Wars fan. Has the A-Wing ever said, like, this is cool to you, Lou?
Yes.
Okay.
I used to be the biggest Star Wars fan until probably about maybe 10 years ago. I used to love flying in an A-Wing in X-Wing versus TIE Fighter or the X-Wing games.
Right.
Where you actually got to fly around in a Starfighter. They were awesome to fly around in.
They're fast. So the idea, yeah. If you've read any of the Extended Universe books, the A-Wings are basically like the hot rod. They're the fast little, yep, Armored in terms of defenses, but also lightly armored in terms of like their offenses as well. They don't have a lot of,
yep,
firepower. But the idea is that they're just meant to like get in, hit you quick, and then get out.
Yeah.
Single pilot. I think, do they have an astromech? I actually don't know this.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think they don't require that kind of stuff. So I guess they have hyperspace in a different way, or they have an onboard computer that allows them to
calculate. They have an onboard computer.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not the biggest fan of the A-Wing. I find the other Starfighters look a little bit more unique. But I also found that I wasn't super impressed with this model. I thought there was a lot of exposed studs for an Ultimate Collector Series, and I feel like it makes it feel odd in scale. Like, you think you're going to get a bigger thing, and then you start to see the studs and the exposed undersides of some of the plates, and you're like, this really feels more like a minifig scale fighter than it should, considering that it is, like I said, the Ultimate Collector's Series. And I've seen through some mocks, some my own creation builds on things like Brothers Brick and Brick Vault on YouTube, and they are minifig scale A-Wing fighters, but they're smoother. Like, they're a sleeker design built by non-Lego people. I shouldn't say non-Lego people, built by people that don't work for Lego. Yeah. And so I'm surprised that it didn't have a little bit more as far as, you know, features and smoothing and lines and things like that. I don't know, though, because they could also be hamstrung by other starfighters like the TIE Fighter, the X-Wing, the Y-Wing Collector Series. Like, they released the Y-Wing Collector Series. I don't know if they've made this to scale. I don't know if it holds up to scale, if it's the right size compared to, say, like the Millennium Falcon, which I think is still the most expensive set that LEGO has ever released. So, like, I'm not sure where it lands there and whether they were hamstrung by, like, all right, well, because we've released these in the last couple of years, we have to release the A-Wing at a certain scale. Otherwise, it's just going to look silly to have, like, a giant A-Wing on your shelf next to the Millennium Falcon, which should be, like, you know, 4-8 times the size, right?
So, right.
Anyway, still, it's still cool Lego. I mean, it's still cool that Legos does this. And like you, I'm sure there's other people out there that have A-Wing as their top list. I don't remember if I shared this in the Discord. If I did, it would have been a couple weeks ago when I first found it. It's only just resurfaced recently. So I'd be curious to see what all the new people in the Discord are going to say about this when they hear about it on the show. But no matter what, it's been a lot of fun to talk about Lego with folks. And I have a couple sets that I want to try and put together. So the Lego Let's Chat series is hopefully coming to Twitch soon. But that's going to be it for my pick this week. Do you have one?
I do. I meant to bring this up last week, but we didn't get around to it. If you're a creator of any kind, the Humble series has put out what they call the Big Music Bundle right now. And it's you pay $1 to $25, and depending on the amount, you get access to a lot of music that you can use in whatever creative endeavor you're using. You're making a video game, you can use one of these tracks in your game. You're a podcaster, you might be able to slip some of this music in the background of your podcast. As far as I know, all of this stuff is supposed to be open rights and you can use whatever you want. And I just thought that was kind of neat. You don't see this very often, so. And a bunch of the money actually goes to charity. So, again, if you're looking for music for your creation or to play in the background during your creation, these is the $25 gets you a lot of tracks.
That's really cool. For anybody that is a creator, I would encourage them to try and find a list or try to find some sort of certification before you purchase these tracks, because I listen to a royalty-free radio station called Pretzel Rocks. I use it for music, for background music when I'm on breaks and when I'm about to start the stream. And one of my streams, the first 6 minutes of my stream this weekend, was flagged for having copyrighted material, but it didn't, because the thing about Pretzel Rocks is that you have a choice between different radio stations. You can listen to whatever you want, or you can say, no, I'm streaming or I'm putting this on YouTube. I need all of the music that you play on this radio station to be royalty-free, like just free to do what I want with. And obviously one of the tracks made it through to the wrong side. Or it sounded enough like a track that was not supposed to be there.
Thank the algorithm.
Yeah, the algorithm flagged it. Although I have to say, that is the only time that has happened. The only time that has happened in the long time that I've been using Pretzel Rocks. So also a fun little app for anybody that's curious. Check it out. But this is really cool. I like the Big Music for Games, Films, and Content Creators bundle on Humble Bundle. And it has 13 days left.
Yeah, and they'll let you try a couple of the tracks too. There's links in each individual pack.
Oh, cool.
It takes you to a SoundCloud page where you can try a couple of the tracks.
Nice. I find sometimes digital orchestral music can sound too tinny, like it sounds a little bit too fake sometimes.
Yeah.
But if it's got, I find the more successful royalty-free tracks these days tend to be more of the digital MIDI, kind of like slightly retro.
There's some of that here too.
Like EDM or Synthwave. I find Synthwave really fitting for a couple of the sci-fi games I play, like Satisfactory and No Man's Sky. They're really cool for, like, you know, ramp up for that kind of thing. They have kind of like there's no theme to them. Like, they don't really have a committed theme or mood. They just kind of have a sound that kind of feels off-worldy, which is kind of fun. But that's very cool. We'll have the links for everything in the show notes. We can find at thecitadelcafe.com. If you are interested in the music for this show, more royalty-free music, you can check out Kevin MacLeod. He's the one that's composed the track that we use for the podcast. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. You can subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and now YouTube as well. Those videos go up about an hour or so after I publish the actual podcast, just because it takes a little bit extra time to export them. Word of mouth, however, is the easiest way to support the show. It's 100% free. We understand that some people cannot support right now because of the whole COVID-19 thing. Anybody that is supporting, know that we really appreciate it. But you can also just tell people about the show. And that in itself just goes a long way. Just getting more ears and more eyes on the Citadel Cafe is something I really appreciate. So normally I'd say poke a friend in the arm, but here just, you know, wave and shout at your neighbors from across the street and tell them to listen to the show. I would very much appreciate it. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online, including my illustration and design portfolio at joelduggan.com. You can find me on social media at Joel Duggan. You can find me on Twitch at Joel Duggan. It's all very, very straightforward. I'd be very hard to be lost because I use my name for just about everything. The only thing that doesn't have my name on the front of it, just kind of on the underneath part of it, is The Spun Chunks, which is my Minecraft podcast. And we record a new episode every Monday. So check that out at thespunchunks.com. Lou, where can people find you and all the cool stuff that you're doing online?
Easiest place to find me is on all the social media that matters under the name Busy Zombie Lord. And you can check out my podcast, Zombies Ate My Podcast, where this week we're going to talk about Resident Evil 3, the remake, and whether or not we liked it or not.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.